crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome to Watch Jerusalem. I'm Christopher Eames, subbing in as your host for today, coming to you from snowy England. I'm taking the program today in order to finish up our three-part series on the antiquity of the scriptures. This time we'll be focusing on the writings, but before we get to that, we certainly can't overlook the events of this past week. President Donald Trump's big speech on Jerusalem, of course. Now, quite late on Wednesday, or at least it was late here in England, and especially for all of you in Israel, Donald Trump announced the recognition of Jerusalem finally as the capital of Israel. Here's a clip of that speech.
After more than two decades of waivers, we are no closer to a lasting peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. It would be folly to assume that repeating the exact same formula would now produce a different or better result. Therefore, I have determined that it is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. While previous presidents have made this a major campaign promise, they failed to deliver. Today, I am delivering. I've judged this course of action to be in the best interests of the United States of America and the pursuit of peace between Israel and the Palestinians.
Trump went on to say that the process of moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem is set to begin. This was quite a moment, really, for Israelis, Jews, and also a great many Christians around the world. Now, of course, Trump had promised this in his campaign, but many doubted he would follow through. And there were several other presidential hopefuls, presidential candidates that made similar promises. Even President Barack Obama in 2008. I want to read to you a quote of what he said in 2008 before he became president. He said, "Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel and it must remain undivided. I have no illusions that this will be easy." Now that was made on June the 4th, 2008, and really quite an incredible difference to what he began saying as president of the United States. There was an almost immediate reversal there in his policy. But this is something that other presidential candidates had made in the past, similarly with Bill Clinton as well. And many doubted that President Trump would follow through with this campaign promise. And yet here we have this announcement. You could say it was an act of bravery. Certainly, there's been a massive outcry around the world, and not just the Muslim world. There's been a lot of nations all over the world outcrying what President Donald Trump has done. But as Trump mentioned, the act was simply a recognition of reality, simply a recognition of reality, of the facts on the ground. And that's true. That's right. I mean, Let's quit with the games for a moment, shall we? Whether you like the decision or not, who controls Jerusalem? Who controls Jerusalem? It is Israel. And therefore, they have the say. They have the say as to what is their capital. It would be, I don't know, for an example, like saying, I don't think Moscow should be the capital of Russia. Well, I could fantasize about it all that I like, pretending Moscow isn't the capital of Russia, but guess what? Russia has control over the area. They decide where their capital is. What Trump did was simply accept reality. The reality is that Israel has the control and the power over Jerusalem and thus has the power to make it their capital. It really seems in this day and age we've somehow gotten ourselves into a bit of a dreamland where we like to play games and pretend things are the way we want them to be. Now, I know the historical connection the Jews have with Jerusalem. That's really a bigger connection to a city than surely any other peoples on the planet. And it's been absolutely irrefutably proven through archaeology. And if you want to know more about that, you can read our Watch Jerusalem article. For example, Uncovering the Bible's Buried Cities, Jerusalem. That's one of our articles on that subject for more information. But there's also something to be said, besides that historical connection, for the fact that powers conquer and control territory. We can pretend that California is still part of Mexico. We can pretend that Normandy is still English. And we can pretend that Jerusalem is Palestinian or, quote-unquote, unresolved. The fact is, powers conquer other powers. And it's time people woke up to simple reality. Israel is the one in control. They have established Jerusalem as their capital after they successfully gained that ground during the 1967 war, a defensive war, remember, for Israel. And so Israel controls Jerusalem and has established it as their capital, not because they set out to war over it, but because they fought a defensive battle started by the 1967 Arab Alliance. Thus, the fact that Jerusalem today even belongs to Israel is because of the Arab gamble in attacking the then much smaller state of Israel. And so again, all Trump has done is to recognize reality. And if you haven't seen it already, make sure you check out Brad McDonald's article on Watch Jerusalem entitled Jerusalem and Donald Trump's Entirely Unremarkable Declaration. Now, we say unremarkable in the fact that it is so obvious, it is so factual, it is reality. Again, all Trump has done is accept reality with this. As Mr. McDonald looked into, he covered the Jewish historical claim to the land. Now, you've probably heard recently a lot of commentators talking about the 3,000-year connection with Jerusalem. And as Mr. McDonald points out in his article, it is more like a 4,000-year history based on Abraham's connection to and relationship with the city. Really close relationship and deep meaning that the city had to the patriarch Abraham. That's often forgotten, but you can find it on Watch Jerusalem. Article by Brad McDonald, Jerusalem and Donald Trump's Entirely Unremarkable Declaration. Now, the fact that Jerusalem today is under total control of Israel is particularly interesting to us at Watch Jerusalem. There is a prophecy in Zechariah chapter 14 that states that just before the coming of the Messiah, Jerusalem would be completely controlled by the Jews and then would be violently split in two. And then this preempts the Messiah's coming. Now, evidently, the Palestinians will be the ones to wrest control of that half of the city, no doubt supported by the Arab countries around them and certain other nations around the world. We won't go into this prophecy right now, but you can read a more in-depth explanation of it on our website, Watch Jerusalem, under the prophecy tab. There you'll find a full timeline of prophecy, including the split of half of Jerusalem leading up to the arrival of the Messiah. So certainly this declaration by Donald Trump has infuriated Muslims around the world. There have been numerous protests. We'll have to see how far the reaction goes to this news, so stay tuned. Well, as I said at the top of the program, the primary reason I'm taking the program today is to wrap up the three-part series on the antiquity of the scriptures. If you're a regular listener, and we thank you very much for doing so, you'll remember that we are covering the series based on the three-part division of the Hebrew Bible, or as it's also called, the Old Testament. Firstly, we've got the Torah, then secondly, the Prophets division, and now thirdly, the Writings. Now, the dating of the Bible is a controversial topic, to say the least. Traditionalists say that the Torah was written by Moses, the Psalms were written mostly by King David, Proverbs by King Solomon, and the Prophets, basically whichever name is carried in the title. Now, revisionists, on the other hand, and there is a growing body of them, say that the Torah was written after the Babylonian captivity, nearly 1,000 years after Moses was on the scene, according to the traditionalists. The revisionists also say really everything else was written after the Babylonian captivity as well. We have these two positions, and this is a really intense debate. Can we really know the answer? Just how ancient and authentic are the biblical writings? So for this final installment, we'll look at these writings. Now, we'll make first mention of the Book of Lamentations. We'll only go through a couple of examples today. We don't have too much time on the program, and I'd like to go and spend more time on the second example, the Book of Daniel. But first up, we'll take a quick look at the Book of Lamentations. Now, traditionalists say that Lamentations was written by Jeremiah after the death of King Josiah, knowing in the knowledge of Judah being doomed for destruction. Now, some revisionists say that it was written much later and it was somewhat of a more imaginary theological idea of what the destruction of Jerusalem actually looked like. Now, there are many links between the style and wording of the Book of Jeremiah and Lamentations. So many traditionalists say that Jeremiah was the one to write Lamentations, and there are a lot of stylistic links between the two. However, archaeology also has something to say regarding the composition of Lamentations. Now, Lamentations is written in an acrostic style, so that means it sequentially follows each letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Now, the first chapter's alphabetical order is the same as the modern Hebrew alphabet, the more modern, younger Hebrew alphabet. However, the acrostics written throughout the remaining chapters, chapters 2 through 4, those acrostics are different to the Hebrew alphabet of late writings. The alphabetical order of two of the letters for these following chapters, the Ein and the Pei, that alphabetical letter of these order of these letters is switched. Now, this does have an early archaeological precedent. There was a Hebrew abecedary, which was found during excavations at Tel Zait in Israel, and it dates to the 10th century BC, and it basically gives the alphabet, or alephbet as it's called in Hebrew, from the first letter to the last letter, and it switches several letters from what we're familiar with in the modern Hebrew alphabet. Now, two of these letters are the Ein and the Pei, switched in the old form of the Hebrew alphabet. And we find this in the Book of Lamentations, that most of the style in the Book of Lamentations, the acrostic style, is written in this ancient form. Now, this is a sign of a transition period, the fact that the first chapter is written in a slightly different form, and then the remaining chapters are written in that earlier ABCD format. And it really is some leftover holdover from that original alphabet order. So that's one small piece of evidence pointing to an earlier original traditional writing for the Book of Lamentations. Now, there's another archaeological discovery that gives some insight into the Book of Lamentations, and it contains an unusual word, the use of the word nachnu, instead of the normal anachnu, which means we or us. Now, this unusual and rare use of this word has been shown through archaeology on the Lachish letters. These are a compilation of inscriptions that date precisely to Jeremiah's time period. So we find a link of this rare, really exceptional use of this word in the Book of Lamentations with the use of the same word during Jeremiah's time period. This isn't a word that should have been used later on. So this shows and is part of the evidence that helps to place the Book of Lamentations beautifully within the corresponding traditional time period of around 600 BC. Now, I think we've got a little bit of time, so I will mention the Book of Ruth as well before the break, just briefly. Traditionalists point to this book as having been written very early on, probably by the prophet Samuel. The minimalists see it as having been written after the 585 BC exile. They conclude that it's somewhat of an allegorical story, perhaps designed as a response to the strict laws that Ezra and Nehemiah were proclaiming against marriage with Gentiles. So quite a different theory there from the revisionists regarding this book. Now, just briefly mentioning for the dating of this book, actually outside of the first five books of the Bible or the Torah, the Hebrew writing used in the Book of Ruth is one of the oldest styles found anywhere in the Bible. Now, we often think of dating the Bible in terms of archaeological discoveries, but we can also gain a lot from textual context, from the text specifically written within the Bible itself, and then compare that text to the way they wrote based on archaeological discoveries. And so the discovery with the Book of Ruth is that it is one of the oldest styles found anywhere in the Bible, if not the oldest, after the first five books, after the Torah. Now, the repeated use of very early words and spelling would be extremely unusual, if not impossible, for a post-exilic writer, someone writing after that captivity, 585 BC, to accurately represent. So based on this, based on some other things as well, we don't have time to go into more research, but this naturally fits a very early period of writing. And as one leading critic even admitted, the ancient stylistic purity of the book, quote, makes it decidedly of the pre-exilic period, so before the captivity. We'll take a short break then. Stay with us. We'll be right back to discuss the dating of the Book of Daniel.
This is Watch Jerusalem. Thank you for listening. At one time, the kings of ancient Israel and Judah, during the period of the divided monarchy, were not known, apart from the biblical record. Critics did not believe they existed. But the relatively new science of archaeology, the digging up and study of the material remains of man's past, has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and personalities that were at one time known to us only from Scripture. The Hezekiah Bulla is the latest find among literally hundreds of archaeological discoveries that corroborates Bible history. To learn more about this God-inspired text, request The Proof of the Bible and the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. There is no cost or obligation, and your information remains secure. All of our literature is offered free of charge, without cost or obligation to you. In addition to the free booklet, we would like for you to enroll in the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This three-year college course includes 36 lessons and examines not just the fundamental questions of religion, but the fundamental questions of life. Request The Proof of the Bible and the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. There is no cost or obligation, and your information remains secure. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. If you've just joined us, we're examining the interesting question of the dating of the Hebrew Bible. We're finishing up the third part of our series, this one on the writings, and now we turn to examine the Book of Daniel. Now, the Book of Daniel, many know it as a prophetic book, but it's actually classed by the Jews among the writings of the Hebrew Bible, so that's why we're covering it among the writings here for the series. Now, the authorship of the Book of Daniel is a prime piece in this debate as to the antiquity of the scriptures, so we'll spend a little bit more time with it. Now, Daniel contains some vivid prophecies pertaining to empires rising and falling on the world scene. Now, traditionalists say that the book is as it is, written by Daniel during the dates stated throughout the text, which relate to the 6th century BC. Now, revisionists and scholars say that there is no way such incredibly accurate prophecies could have been made in advance, and thus they assign a later date to Daniel's writings, specifically the 2nd century BC, after many of those prophecies, especially regarding Antiochus Epiphanes, had occurred. They say that there is no way to explain an earlier writing for the book without believing in divine inspiration. Now, those who believe in this late post-prophecy date, they produce a number of indicators for this. They say that that Daniel used Greek words, hence it had to have been written during that later Greek time period, that deeply Hellenized time period. They also take a lot of issue with other elements of the language. Critics also point out certain elements in the book as being unknown to history, hence they must have been the product of the writer's imagination. Let's look at these arguments one by one. Now, the Book of Daniel actually only has 3 Greek words in its entirety. These words are actually contained in only one verse, and they all refer to very specific musical instruments. Now, we know during this traditional dating of Daniel, during the 6th century BC, that Greece was already well-established and on the scene, so it would be no problem for these very specific instruments mentioned in the royal courts of Babylon for them to have been mentioned. Now, one of these words, these Greek words, katharos, has even been found in use as early as the 8th century BC. Another of these specific Greek words has been found in use during that 6th century BC. Now, the final Greek word used in Daniel has not been found in any early sources, but considering that scientists say we have less than 10% of classical Greek writings, only one Greek word cannot be held up as evidence for sending Daniel to the 2nd century BC. And so we see from these other two examples of musical instruments mentioned very early on that they quite naturally fit into Daniel's time period. What would be unusual is for a 2nd century writing, if we are to believe the revisionists, it would be unusual for a 2nd century writing to be so devoid of Greek terminology. If Daniel had been written down during the 2nd century BC, around the height of Hellenization, it should have had many, many more Greek words throughout the text, and instead, we only find 3. Now, some scholars also point out the presence of Persian words used in Daniel, and they point to that, giving the book a later date. And actually, there's only 15 Persian words used in the Book of Daniel. They mostly refer to administration positions. And anyway, Daniel himself is quite clearly described as living and writing during the Persian period of rule. So, of course, he should be expected to use these Persian terms. And actually, 6 of these Persian words are not found in use any later than the end of the 4th century BC. So even that is proof against a late 2nd century BC writing for the Book of Daniel. All of them are considered old Persian words, fitting with that earlier rite of dating. So the collective linguistic evidence certainly points to an earlier date, and even specific elements of phraseology, such as the use of the term Lord of Heaven, points to an early date. Now, this term, Lord of Heaven, actually fell out of use during the later Maccabean period when the revisionists suppose that Daniel was written. This term fell out of use because of associations with the god Zeus at that time period. Now, there's one final note on language here. There are around 20 native Assyrian Babylonian words in the Book of Daniel. If the book really had been written at a much later date, we would expect that the words such as these would not have been used. The second main point about proving the Book of Daniel, the dating for the Book of Daniel, is looking at the historical elements in the book. Now, there's contention that certain elements of the book haven't been fully verified by archaeology. And thus, the revisionists say that they must have been the invention of ghostwriters with a murky idea of sort of what Babylon and Persia looked like during the period of their empires. And actually, that's not the case. Daniel's description of life in the centers of Babylonian and Persian power, that they have been found to be remarkably accurate. Archaeological discoveries have constantly confirmed his assessments, making it almost impossible to have been composed by someone writing several hundred years later and about 1,000 miles away from those capitals of those empires, from Israel instead. Now, Daniel's descriptions of Nebuchadnezzar's building programs, his boastfulness, his hasty threats, and possibly even his love for cedar trees, talked about in Daniel 4, these have all been confirmed through archaeology. And further, numerous accounts of ancient sources confirm Daniel's account of the fall of Babylon, including the records of King Cyrus himself. Those records match perfectly with Daniel's account. Other details have also been confirmed, such as just how binding the laws of the Medes and Persians were. You'll remember Daniel in the lion's den. Even a king couldn't take back his own laws, whereas on the other hand, really Babylonian kings could haphazardly change their laws, as Daniel likewise recorded. Now, archaeology has uncovered a similar type of event as Daniel and the lion's den, an event where a Persian king condemned a man to death for a crime. It was later found out that that crime didn't actually get committed by that man, and so the king didn't want to go through with the punishment to condemn this man to death, but because of the binding nature of the Persian and Median laws, that king had to go through with it. That man had to be killed. It's really quite incredible. And so Daniel records that kind of real attachment to law, that Persian attachment to law and not changing anything. Daniel records that accurately. It's also been confirmed that fires were a Babylonian mode of punishment. You'll remember Daniel's three friends in the furnace. And it's been confirmed that Persians would keep caged lions. Again, relating to Daniel and the lion's den. Daniel accurately detailed the governmental bureaucracy. He recorded accurately the reign of Belshazzar, a co-regent king who, up until recently, scholars thought he was just someone made up. They thought Daniel, this is the proof that Daniel wasn't written by a legitimate man in the courts of Babylon. But then, of course, over the last century, Belshazzar has turned up, and the revisionists have to change their theories again. Now, the proof just keeps going on. These insanely accurate details, and there are many more, even down to the fact that the Babylonian walls were plastered. Remember the hand writing on the plaster on the wall? That's been proven as well. And these details make it ludicrous to think that some Maccabean writer, writing hundreds of years later, 1,000 miles away in the land of Judea, it makes it impossible for him to record that history more accurately even than the historian Herodotus, who lived just following the time period described by Daniel. There are portions of Daniel that more accurately describe Babylon than the historian Herodotus. Now, of course, not every single word of Daniel has been confirmed through archaeology, but let's wait. Let's just see, because this method of criticizing based on a lack of evidence has fallen flat in the past. We saw that with Belshazzar, and we're sure to see it again. Now, there's even been a tantalizing possible reference to Daniel's three friends on a prism listing Babylonian officials during the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. So there's a lot of archaeological information out there that really helps to corroborate the original traditional dating of the writing of the Book of Daniel. Now, we don't have much time left, but actually one of the biggest and most overlooked proofs for a traditional date of Daniel are the prophecies. Remember, the real reason for redating Daniel in the first place was because such vividly described events surely couldn't have been predicted in advance. Thus, the writing of Daniel must have been dated after these prophecies occurred. But there's just one problem. The revised 2nd century BC dating still comes far earlier than the remarkable fulfillment of most of Daniel's prophecies. Now, if possible, Daniel would be given a much later date, really preferably at least from the 5th century AD. The fact that a copy of this book exists, though, we've seen that with the Dead Sea Scrolls, the fact that a copy of the book exists from the 2nd century BC means that the earliest date the scholars are willing to accept is the 2nd century BC. So that's what they do. Despite the above evidence to the contrary, dating Daniel after some of his remarkable prophecies. Yet Daniel's detailed prophecies also include the Roman Empire. Daniel quite clearly described 4 successive world-ruling kingdoms, and one of those was the Roman Empire. And not only that, but the continual resurrections, so to speak, of that Roman Empire. He accurately recorded the founding of the empire, the Roman Empire. He recorded the takeover by the Vandals, then the Heruli, then the Ostrogoths. That was 5th to 6th centuries AD. There's the recording in it, the prophecy of the imperial restoration during the 6th century. And there were other things like the Habsburg dynasty. Daniel prophesied of that circa 1520 AD. There was Napoleon's kingdom. There was the German-Italian fascist regimes culminating in the Third Reich. And according to the Book of Daniel, there is one more destructive resurrection, so to speak, of the Roman Empire. One more to go before the coming of the Messiah that he likewise prophesied about. Now, you can read about all of these things in our free booklets, Who or What is the Prophetic Beast? And the Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. So despite all the striving to give Daniel a later date, no date is late enough to escape his prophetic timeline. The Book of Daniel wasn't written for his day, and Daniel admits that in chapter 12, that he was confused by these prophecies. He didn't know what they meant. And God inspired him to record there in chapter 12, "But you, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." And he said, "Go thy way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end." And so it's only now, in this end time, that the book of Daniel has been fully revealed. Daniel couldn't have fully understood it at any other point in history. It doesn't matter if he was writing in the traditionalist 6th century BC or the revisionist 2nd century BC. So for more information on that and to see how those prophecies have been fulfilled, how they have been understood now in this end time, make sure you order a copy of our booklet, History and Prophecy of the Middle East. So the proof for the writing of the Bible in its original, literal form is abundant. So considering so much evidence, we must ask why the radical redating of the Hebrew Bible to such a late time frame. Very often it's done by Jewish scholars themselves. Why? There is something incredibly special about the Bible, and there's something incredibly sinister about those who can continually try to discredit and belittle it. And it has regularly done so without any evidence to go on, only preconceived bias. And yet, there is not a single discovery that has disproved the Bible. Yet surely its words can't be true, they say. Surely its prophecies were made up after the fact, so we are led to believe. But with more and more discoveries being made, we are seeing more and more proof that even a late date cannot account for the fulfillment of these prophecies. Well, that's about all the time we have for today's program. For a more detailed look into the dating of the writings or the other parts of the series, the prophets or the Torah, check out our articles on Watch Jerusalem, this most recent one entitled The Antiquity of the Scriptures, The Writings. If you'd like to get in touch with us, have any comments or anything else, you can email us at letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Thanks very much for listening, and until next time, shalom.